Welcome to the Sleep Junkies podcast. My name's Jeff Mann. I'm the founder and editor of sleepjunkies.com. And we cover the whole conversation on sleep. We talk about the science and the health aspects. We talk about the culture of sleep. We talk about the sleep industry. Pretty much any interesting topic that's got anything to do with sleep, we'll cover it. And today we're going to talk about daylight saving time. So what has daylight saving time got to do with sleep, I hear you ask? Well, just as a brief recap, these changes were introduced about 100 years ago when the world was a very different place, and it was done during the First World War as a means to save coal and save energy and also increase productivity by having more light in the evening hours. The world has changed. We now live in a 24/7 society and the economic arguments don't add up anymore. So people have started to realise this, there's been debates, and last year the EU proposed to abolish daylight saving time across all of European countries. But arguably more important than all that are the health implications, which haven't really been discussed because a lot of these findings are coming from a brand new emerging field which has been called circadian medicine. And on the other end of the line, we're going to talk to a scientist who has authored a report along with 8 other researchers from all around the world. And really for the first time, they've started to piece together the existing research, and research is just starting to emerge, that show the extent and the impact that circadian disruptions such as daylight saving time have on our health. I'm going to leave it there. If you're liking the Sleep Junkies podcast, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes. You can check us on Google, on Spotify, all those places. Also, you can visit the website, sleepjunkies.com. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So that's it for the introduction. On with the show. Today, we are joined all the way from Portugal by Professor Miguel Mayra e Cruz. Did I get that right, Miguel?
Yeah. Thank you.
The reason I've invited Miguel on the line today, it's just come out and it's a new paper about the detrimental effects of daylight saving time. And we're going to talk about the context of publishing the paper. But first, could you just give us a bit of a background to your professional experience?
Right, Jeff. Thank you very much for this invitation. I am an expert in sleep medicine and chronobiology, and I am the coordinator of sleep unit in the Cardiovascular Center of University of Lisbon in the Lisbon School of Medicine. And I am the president of the Portuguese Society of Chronobiology and Sleep Medicine. Myself and a group of 8 expert leaders in the subject, chronobiology and sleep medicine, with specific expertises on cardiovascular medicine, on immunology, and on internal medicine, etc., we decide to join and to discuss the different issues regarding that question of daylight saving time benefits or detrimental effects. And we did that in August 2018, and we wrote this paper that analyzes, criticizes some aspects. It's actually a consensual view between different experts about the daylight saving time impact on health and well-being.
So the context for this, because we had some proposals to actually abolish daylight saving time by the European Union. And they weren't recommendations as such, but I think it was proposed to end it this year. Is that correct?
Yeah. Actually, there are some proposals from 2014 to abolish daylight saving time, because for Finland as well as for the northern European countries, daylight saving time doesn't make sense, because the difference between day and light during winter and during summer is much more pronounced. And the plausible impact on 1 hour more in the summer to improve quality of life, that is the actual argument But the question is that in the countries of Northern Europe and the countries near the equator, these changes on time have not the same impact as in the Central Europe, because near the equator, the light is much similar distributed during winter or during summer, you know. And in the Northern European, there is extreme changes. So the impact is very different. That was the principle that the Finland people asked for the abolishment of daylight saving time. And it started creating some noise, and after that other European countries tried to follow and to ask the abolishment.
But essentially, Northern Europe, where an hour's difference in the timing isn't going to make, you know, it's not such a big deal at an hour,
no,
because they're, you know, they're at such extreme latitude. And then,
as well as in the equator.
Yeah, and the same on the equator, where they don't really have, you know, much difference at all. So the other extreme. Mm-hmm. And then these rumblings came to the ears of the rest of Europe, and they started to listen, and they polled the rest of Europe. And then they found this idea that most of the public wanted to get rid of it. But basically, the EU was thinking about getting rid of daylight saving time, and you and your team really for the first time collected a lot of the evidence together so we can start to make decisions based on evidence.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the history. Can you explain why it came about in the first place?
Actually, the first time someone thought about that, it was to take the chance of getting more light during the day, especially during those months of summer. However, Benjamin Franklin comes to Paris and they propose to save candles that were used. And they first hypothesized that promoting more light, more natural light, may favor the economical benefits of saving some resources. Then the political questions of saving resources for the war. And that's why in Germany it was decided to promote daylight saving time in order to save coal and in order to save the resources that were lacking.
So we started right in the middle of the First World War, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And with a specific purpose that seems to be no valid anymore, because actually the world has changed, and we now use a lot of resources that spend energy even outside or inside of our houses. And we now have a different kind of energetic resources, or don't fit in that argument.
I'd like to come to that in a little bit, but I just want to rewind and talk just a little bit more about the history. So about 100 years ago, 1916, Germany adopted this idea that had been floating around to save coal and to save energy. And then it kind of spread really quickly, certainly throughout Europe, this idea.
Yeah, the first European countries adopting the same idea and the same policy were actually adopting because of the friendship with the policy of Germany. For example, Franco in Spain and Salazar in Portugal, and the similarities of policies was taken into account more than the benefits. That's why this is more a question of politics than a question of biology, since their origins.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. And actually, nobody thought that how harmful this could be.
We didn't have any sleep science, arguably, didn't.
No,
science didn't arguably exist at that time. We didn't know about the sleep
of course,
brain.
Of course not.
All those discoveries were made later.
No, actually, the beginning of daylight saving time, not officially, but the beginning of daylight saving time, born in Canada. And much earlier, in 1875, I think. But in small cities, and it was a question of individual decisions from some cities.
Let's go into actually talk about some of the research. Now, your team is from a biology and medicine background. Is that fair to say? From clinical medicine and immunology. But there's also a lot of research in the social sciences about the impacts of daylight saving time. And I just want to talk about how collectively some of this research specifically affects sleep.
It is important to say that sleep is just one of the millions of rhythms we have in our body. Of course, it is the most obvious rhythm from which depends many functions as cardiovascular, as hormonal, neuroendocrine, as metabolic, and of course, in terms of psychological impact, you will have less sleep when you change for daylight saving time.
Some of these research findings, there's been research to show that after the change in clocks, a spike in heart attacks, road traffic accidents due to fatigue.
It is interesting that, not surprisingly, the daylight saving time is implemented in Sunday. And if you see the trend during the year, in all Mondays, this when exists more cardiovascular problems, for example, and more problems related to stress. Not only on daylight saving time moment. Monday is one day favorable to cardiovascular and metabolic compromise in health. Of course, in daylight saving time, we take out 1 hour for most people. When you take out 1 hour of sleep, it will have an impact, an important impact. And first, for example, in that relation to cardiovascular events, we know that our sleep specially regulates cardiovascular functions. So if you take off that hour, you will make some more instability on the system. There is an association, but we are not sure what that association means. What we know, it disrupts the way our cardiovascular system.
What about fatigue and industrial accidents, road traffic accidents as well? Can you say something about those associations?
Yeah, on one hand, you have the loss of sleep time during change of time in the summer. You are more prone to the fatigue, to the increased sleepiness, and therefore to the increasing risk of traffic accidents. And also, in terms of cognitive impairment, you are less able to decide properly and critically judge. That's why it's more risky after daylight saving time and after you get a loss of sleep, but not only loss of sleep, the disruption of circadian time in your brain, the loss of this synchrony leads to a more complicated synchrony of mechanisms, namely the neurocognitive mechanism.
Do we have any sort of statistics about road traffic accidents in particular? Or again, is it more of an association like with the studies they've done with cardiovascular health?
The question is that is very difficult to say in the majority of works. What we analyzed was exactly to criticize the studies that are published because the associations are not really linked to daylight saving time, but with the circadian cycle that each week changes. We have rhythms of 24 hours that are circadian rhythms. But we have other rhythms, you know. That's why I was talking with you about the Monday's question on the cardiovascular events. So when you do these studies, and we are looking for the question of daylight saving time, but you cannot forget that there is a change independently of daylight saving time. However, of course, we know that when we disrupt our clock, of course, we are less able to perform properly, including in the traffic decisions. And that's why the accidents after daylight saving time are more and are worse.
A lot of people say fatigue and sleep-related accidents are worse than drunk driving accidents because
exactly.
Even if it's a micro-sleep, you literally won't react, so you won't brake. Whereas if you're on drink driving or drug driving, eventually you would react and press the brake, but with sleep accidents, you know, you potentially...
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's why the accidents caused by sleepiness are worse than the accidents caused by drinking, and they cause more mortality. Is that exactly what you told? We have microsleep. Our brain needs to stop even by some seconds, and it's very common. It's very common that...
Okay, so we're doing quite well. I'm trying to build a case here, as if we're in court, and build a case against daylight saving time. So we've got cardiovascular problems, we've got fatigue-related problems, we've got road traffic accidents. There's been some really interesting research and some stuff that's unsurprisingly, you know, made media headlines to do with the more cognitive and also, you know, ethical decision making after daylight saving time. So the one that's got the most headlines, this study that judges have issued harsher sentences. So yeah, if you go on this Monday after daylight saving time, you're more likely to receive a harsher sentence, more years in prison or a harsher fine.
Yeah, and that's linked to neurocognitive issues, of course.
Yeah, no, tell me about the context around that.
Well, first, I'm a scientist, but actually I try to have sense. So we must be cautious with interpretation of many things that you see. So of course, there is more probability after this because all those issues that we talk about, judgments, are different. But the question is that you change the internal time, even with or without sleep impact, you have absolute changes in mechanisms which will impact our cognitive functions. And cognitive functions include decision-making functions and the critical judgment. More errors in many aspects for the medical community, increasing errors, but also for decisions, as you told, related to judges and to important decisions.
Yeah, so it's very clear there's two separate issues, direct sleep loss because of the shift in clocks, but perhaps more importantly, as you say, it's the disruption, the circadian disruption.
The question is that it is very hard to attribute to the chrono disruption. In sleep, you can see that you sleep less or you sleep more. But in chrono disruption, you actually don't see the mechanisms. You can't see the mechanisms. So that's why it's hard to attribute. And actually, they join the effects of sleep and the effects of chrono disruption. They potentiate each other.
You mentioned in your publication as well that some people say, well, daylight saving is just like hopping on a plane and getting an hour's worth of jet lag. But that's the wrong way of looking at it, isn't it?
Of course it is. That's a terrible idea. You know, that it's totally different. Because you will travel, and the sun will travel with you. And the first mechanism, the most important mechanism that regulates our biological clock and our internal clock, it's the light.
Yep.
So if you change your time, the sun will impact on you properly. You will be more able to resynchronize when you are.
Eventually, yes. So eventually your body will entrain to the new light cycle.
Exactly.
And it might take you a few days to do that, but you will entrain.
Yeah, but you'll entrain more easier. In the daylight saving time, no, because you change the hour, but the sun is exactly in the same place. That will affect our entrainment process.
Intuitively, you might overlook because you think, well, 1 hour, it's not really going to make that much difference. But if you think about it in terms of this circadian biology, you take all that precision timing, which is based on the light, and you shift it by an hour. Now, if you think of it in that way, that's a massive disruption. It's not like jet lag, because with jet lag, you'll have the timing change, but you'll also have the sunlight to entrain yourself back into that rhythm again.
And we know that some people will experience some disruptive behaviors after daylight saving time for 3 days, for 4 days, for 1 week, 1 month. But there is some people that will never recover. It is a real worry.
There's one more thing I want to mention in this. These topics kind of overlap into this idea of social jet lag. And I just wondered if you can just briefly explain what social jet lag is and how this ties in with these ideas of shifting clocks and people being permanently out of sync.
The social jet lag is an important issue in the modern era. We are actually desynchronized with our desirable schedules. And of course, regarding the question of daylight saving time, this will result in even worse disruption.
So my real simple definition I explain to people about social jet lag is that we have an internal time. Till Ronenberg, who wrote a really good book called Internal Time, where our internal time, which is our circadian rhythms, are out of sync with our social time, which is our work schedules and the things we do at night time. And so this internal time and external time or social time are out of sync, which creates a permanent social jet lag. And as you say, daylight saving time makes it even worse.
Of course. By all the mechanisms we are discussing, this desynchronization between both the social clock and the internal clock, and we pay for that.
I want to move on. And your paper is very much making people aware that there's existing research, but there's also a whole load of new cutting edge research, which we're only really starting to scratch the surface of. And this is to do with the things that you've touched on briefly earlier about this idea that every single cell in our body, there's multiple clocks all synchronized by this master clock in our brain, of which sleep timing is only one aspect. And there's hormones, you know, blood pressure, you know, alertness, our immune system, all of these things are dictated and are dependent on individual peripheral clocks, you call them. And it's been given this term of circadian medicine. This is a very new idea, isn't it? And it encompasses a lot of different specialities within medicine.
Yeah, it's very important, because, well, we talked about many aspects of physiology, and we talk about that interaction that exists between this master clock and the other clocks, the other cellular clocks, the other molecular clocks, and all that interaction that is very difficult to understand is very important. So there are some studies that showed that this chronodisruption, apparently innocent behaviors, impacts on the proliferations of neoplastic cells, of cancer cells, the lungs, for example. Of course, all those mechanisms are studied in vitro and are studied in animals, in animal models, and in static models. It's very difficult to study that on more dynamic and more favorable models. I usually compare you can smoke a lot of cigarettes and don't die because of lung cancer, and you can smoke a few of them and you die at the age of 20. The question is that you don't feel the impact, because this is silently occurring in the organism, this effect of chronodisruption. Even though the science is dynamic and it changes, what we know now probably will change in some way in the future. But we are absolutely sure that this chronodisruptive effect of changing time, even for our behaviors, but during daylight saving time, have a deleterious effect. Even those molecular mechanisms regarding the construction of DNA, cells change their timing of action on different functions. The proteins that determine cell functions are changed because of that DNA change that also is regulated in a circadian fashion. And, well, as I told you, there is a window of opportunity to vulnerability regarding some diseases, also because bacteria have individual clocks, and they use those clocks to invade some cells and virus also. So this is a highly complex interaction between physiology, between physiopathological vulnerability within our organisms, but also with external agents.
Some people are saying this is going to be, you know, it's going to be a paradigm sort of shift in how we approach health, right down to DNA and how genes are expressed. Pretty much the whole way we approach health, the times of treatment, when we take medicines, you know, when we're vulnerable to infections.
I will just add, because you mentioned about the medicines, there is an interesting field that is chronopharmacology, the importance of giving drugs at the right time, according to our individual internal time.
Yep.
And that is an important issue that is not discussed in this paper, but it is actually another important issue. For example, cytostatics, the medication used in cancer, the cytostatics, for example, it kills some cells that we want to kill, but it kills other cells that you don't want to kill. When you use the knowledge on circadian opportunity to give these medicines, not only with the cytostatics, but with the antibiotics and with almost all the drugs, you potentiate the therapeutic effect of the medication, and you will be able to decrease the major negative effects of those drugs. Yep. And that's have an impact of this daylight saving time. For example, the people who have depressive symptoms are more prone to occur during the night time and during the winter, comparing to the summer, as you know. When we don't think about this integrative knowledge, we lost some opportunities of improving health in this way too.
So we've been building a case now. Daylight saving time, is it a good thing or a bad thing? I think we all know the answer to that. But can you just explain the conclusions that you came to in the paper and the recommendations that you laid out at the end?
Well, obviously, after that discussion we had here, our opinion is that the daylight saving time should not continue. And after that, we think that the winter time, as we call the standard time, is the proper time to maintain. Because for the most of us, and is the most natural time.
Yeah, this is an important point. And I think it came out in the polls as well. Most people expressed that they wanted to switch to permanent summertime if they were to get rid of daylight saving time.
I personally believe that is the main problem is to aggressively change the time twice a year. Our belief is that the winter time is the most natural. So we are adapted and we have all our mechanisms, our molecular mechanisms, our cells are adapted to that issue. So it is useful to talk in one more topic because some people tell that one of the problems of not changing the daylight saving time or changing for the winter, the children, for example, go to the schools when it is night and that's a problem. No, it's not a problem. France, for example, changed, independently of the daylight saving time, you know, the schedules are very early. So we can change the internal policies in the countries and in the global commercial. We don't need to change our biology because our biology will not respond properly to our abusive demands.
So this is the main overriding point, is just stop the twice a year disruption. This is the big message you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very clear. I know this is not an exclusively sleep-based topic, but it's so important to the issues of sleep.
Of course.
Which is why I wanted to get you to talk about this. One other thing that came up as we were talking about this, which I didn't know, completely unrelated to the study, but you've written a book, which is a child's book, but it's also a book that can be used in schools as an educational tool. And it's based around your expertise and your studies, and it's educating kids about, and maybe the adults as well, about our body clocks.
Actually, it's totally related with that issue because it's a book about the damage of our biological clock because of the light contamination. The story is about the story of a wolf. As you know, wolves living in a nocturnal preference, and he goes to the city, and the city have too much light, and then he damage his biological clock. And he gets thin, he gets without anger, without happiness, and it causes many worries from the community in the forest. And, well, it's an interesting book for teaching children and their educators, because there is a guide in order to teach the relevance of exactly of this internal time and the importance of we respect this routine of our functions and to respect these related issues on sleep, but with all our behaviors in life.
You know, I'm not trying to sell this to anybody, but I think it's putting this hugely, hugely complex topic and distilling it into a story like that, especially when we're trying to educate young people, is a really valuable thing to do. And it's funny because I live in part of London and there's a lot of parks here. We have loads and loads of foxes, urban foxes. And you go to the country and you see a fox and it's a beautiful creature. And the foxes in London, they're all skinny. They've got no fur. Yeah. They look really ill. Yeah. So it's exactly how you describe the wolf story. But I hope it's got a happy ending, your book.
Yeah, okay, of course. Great. The wolf will learn and how to prevent damage on
great.
As well as we should learn how to prevent it, and including to stop with the daylight saving time.
And it's coming out on World Sleep Day, isn't it? Which is the 5th of March.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Miguel. Are there any other resources you would recommend for people who are interested in these issues and might be affected by them?
Well, for sure. It will be a lot of more information after that paper, because we are writing a second document trying to accumulate exactly the evidence that lack in other issues, that issue of pharmacology, but we are preparing another document, and we are sure that many comments and many other aspects will subside from this first consensus.
Thanks so much for sharing this, for talking to us today.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Sleep Junkies podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. Leave us a review on iTunes if you can. And you can also check out the website, sleepjunkies.com. And also check us out on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, and our Facebook group, Sleep Junkies Worldwide. That's it for today. See you on the next one. Sleep well.